Please join me in welcoming Steve M. from Laguna Beach. Laguna Hills, sorry.
Good evening, my name's Steve and I am alcoholic.
Steve.
And it's good to be here, it's good to be sober. I'd like to welcome our newcomer. I got to talk to you a little bit of coming in the room. And anybody who didn't identify, happy birthday to the birthday recipients. Man, there's a lot of them. Birthdays are a big deal. I was told early on, if you don't think a birthday's a big deal, just try to get one. And then, and that's been my experience. Get some stuff out of the way here. My sobriety date is the 11th day of June, 1993. I have a home group. It's the Legacies Group. It's in Laguna Hills. We meet on Sunday nights. It's a strong three Legacies group. It's a speaker meeting that we have two 10-minute speakers and a main speaker. And then on the last Sunday of every month, we celebrate all the birthdays for the month. And we do a traditions talk on a certain tradition throughout the year. And and I have a sponsor, and that sponsor knows he's my sponsor. I just spent 4 days with him in Tennessee last weekend, and he's been my sponsor for almost 20 years. And I say that, but you know, to be honest, to be completely transparent up here, I've been reasonably sponsorable in the 32 years that I've been sober. You know, it's I'll throw that disclaimer out there right away. Thank you for the group for having me. You know, it's I've been up here once. It's been a while, and it's been a fantastic day. You know, before I get into my story, I have a daughter that lives just up the street here, and I have two grandkids, and I was able to come up early and spend the afternoon with those grandkids, and the more blessing of that is that she's at work in Santa Maria. And her ex-husband and I and the kids went out to lunch and went to a park, and you know, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that we can all come together, and no matter what the past is, no matter what happened, it's been a great day, and I'm delighted to be here. Couple of things, you know, I'll get the logistics out of the way here. I was born in Downey, California, middle class family. You know, you hear the common theme of amongst our members that, you know, that they never felt like they fit in. That's not my story. You'll hear I felt like I fit in wherever I went. But my household was great growing up. I mean, I love my childhood. I have an older brother who's 2 years older than me. He's not alcoholic. I have a sister who's 10 years younger than me. We adopted her when she was 4 days old. Went and picked her up at the hospital. She was my pride and joy. This little baby was the love of my life. And she'll be a big part of my story later on. But we wanted for nothing. You know, it was a middle-class family. My dad was a super hard worker, provided well for the family. My fondest memories of my childhood were my brother and I both played sports growing up. And he was the coach of all of those sporting teams, my brothers and myself. My mom was on the sidelines keeping score. We took great family vacations. There was no alcoholism in the family, in the household. There was no violence in the household. Everything was perfect. I'll throw this out there. I have seen the progression of this illness in my family. Alcoholism does run in the family. I saw the progression of this illness in two different forms, and I like to share those. But first of all, my grandmother on my father's side, his mom. When I was born, my dad gave her an ultimatum. He says, you know, you either put the plug in the jug or you're never going to see your grandkids again. And she did that for 17 years. Right? My dad's sister died. Her daughter died suddenly of a brain aneurysm. She took the plug out of that jug and she was dead in 3 months. So I have no doubt that me not having a drink for 32 years, if I was to start drinking today, it would be like I never stopped. Flip side of that, on my mom's side, her brother, who I take after identically, we look alike, talk alike, act alike, drank alike, he never wanted to get sober. You know, did all those good things that alcoholics do, you know, went through marriages, went through jobs, brilliant man, all of that. Drank himself to death at the age of 52 years old. And I saw both of those people in the hospital on their last days, and it was a horrific death. It was a horrific death. They were yellow, you know, just barely alive, and you would think that would stun me and wake me up, but it didn't. I had a great childhood. Drank. I remember my first drink. It was nothing spectacular. It wasn't like you hear some of our members share, oh, that thing went down and it was hit the stomach and the starburst wind broke out in my brain and it was beautiful and I couldn't wait to do it again. That wasn't my experience at all. There was an older guy that lived down the street and he had a nice red Corvette and my buddy and I grew up with, we were running buddies and we helped him wax that car one day and he bought us a six pack of tall Budweisers for helping him. And we went into my buddy's garage and down those Budweisers and nothing magical happened. We got a good buzz and we laughed, but it wasn't like I couldn't wait to do it again. I was probably 13, 14 years old. Went into high school and I drank normal in high school. What normal high school people drink. And I played sports. The Friday night parties after the football games, and there was a dairy down the, and this is how we're doing some inventory work. I look back, I probably did have a little alcoholic tendencies, if you would, back in the day. There was a drive-through dairy just on the outskirts of the town, and this guy would sell beer to anybody who pulled in. If you got the beer out of the cooler, put it in a bag, put it in your car, he'd take your money. And I'll date myself, and I never forget, I would always get 2 6 packs of Lowenbrau Light. And anybody, old drinkers around here remember Lowenbrau, the Lowenbrau Dark and Lowenbrau Light. I got the light, and then I would take the six pack in with me to drink at those parties, and I would leave that other six pack out in the back because I knew that by the time I got in there and I drank that six pack, that keg that was there would be pumping foam, and I'd be out of beer, right? And I'd have the backup in the car. And that would be the way I drank until I quit drinking in 1993. I always had backup in the car. So I graduated from high school unscathed. Downey's a small town. I had an uncle, he was my godfather, but I called him my uncle, my dad's best friend from kindergarten, who was a lieutenant for the police department in town there. And I was one of those little explorer junior cop guys that kids that run around, you know, so I knew all the police officers in town and they knew me and they knew my car. I had a car, a flashy car, it was very, very distinct, and they never bothered me. And the police department in Downey is known for being not real friendly, right? They never bothered me. I came out of that high school years unscathed. When I turned 18 in April of 1978, I was to graduate 2 months later. My brother's girlfriend's dad was a big wig at a utility company. My brother had just started with that utility company and his soon-to-be father-in-law said, look, if you want a job, all you gotta do is pass this test, get a diploma, and you've got the job, right? That's the way you used to get jobs at the utility companies. You had to know somebody. So I get this, I turn April, I turn 18 years old. I go right next door to the high school, happened to be the employment office for this company. I went and took the test, passed the test. They said, look, all you need is a diploma. I graduated on a Thursday night in June, 1978. Friday morning, I walked in with that diploma. I handed it to them. They said, start Monday morning, I report to this location. So here I was, 18 years old. I mean, barely 18 years old. 2 days out of high school, 3 days out of high school, and I enter this world, right? This adult world where everybody's old. Everybody's in their 20s and 30s. That's the way it felt. And I walk in there and I thought, oh my God, you know, this is crazy. But see, back up a little, I'm a chameleon. I can fit in anywhere, right? Like I said earlier, you get these, you hear our members share that they never felt like they fit in. I always felt like I fit in. I always felt like I fit in. I always felt like I could. See, I could hang around. Well, I couldn't hang around the smart people, but the jocks. Or I could be over there across the street at Loser's Corner, You know, there's one from across the street from every high school where everybody's smoking cigarettes and doing their thing, right? And I could be in both, either place, and I could be accepted and I could fit in just perfectly. And so I turned on that chameleon face of mine, and I adapted very well. I excelled in that job. They loved me. I was an installer repairman when I started. And I would see these guys pulling in into the yard, you know, to park their trucks. And these big, big trucks, right, with these big booms on them. And they had big, giant reels on the back of these trucks. And they were towing telephone poles. And I thought, that's a job I want, right? I want that job. I want to drive this little Ford Courier. I want the big truck, right? And I put in my transfer, and I had 9 months with the company, and they pulled my transfer and they said, go be a lineman, right? So here I am, barely 19 years old, and I entered the real world really fast. These guys were, and they told me before I transferred, when I put in my transfer, they said, don't do that. Those guys are animals. You know, that's the heavy gang. Those are the knuckle draggers. You know, those guys eat installer repairmen for lunch, you know, and you go over there and you'll fall into the abyss and never come out, right? I thought, sounds like a good place for me. So when I transferred, I went through their hazing like everybody did, right? And but I'm a chameleon, right? And I adapted well. And those boys drank, right? And they drank hard. And along the way, I everybody was married, had a house, a couple of kids, a couple of dogs, right? And I thought, that's what you're supposed to do, right? That's what an adult's supposed to do. I'm 19 years old, and I take this hostage. I went fishing from the company pier, and I got a barracuda. And I thought it wasn't a barracuda. I just used it well disguised. And we got married at 20 years old. On November the 15th, 1980, we got married, and I tell you, that day of that marriage was the highlight of that whole marriage, which lasted 11 years. And it was not good from the beginning, but I hung in there, right? Because that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what my family did. That's what my mom and dad did. That's what all my coworkers did. And I hung in there, right? And I'm still not, I don't consider myself alcoholic. I drank. Somewhere along between around 25 years old, after drinking for 5 years with these guys, 6 years with these guys, you know, what they would do is on payday Friday, they'd go around the corner of the 7-Eleven, get a couple cases of beer, drink it down, and then head home, right? And I go doing some inventory work and looking back, and that's when I would say, why are you going home? Let's go get another case of beer, right? We're not done yet. We just started. It's Friday night. It's payday. We got money in our pocket. And that was going to be my story for the next 5 years. At 25 years old, we had our son, Adam, who, and so things were not well, but they weren't horrible. But in that last 5 years, they went downhill quick, right? And at 29 years old, we decided we're going to fix this marriage because we're tired of fighting. So we decided to have another child. That's going to fix it, right? And at 30 years old, we have our daughter Ariel. And by this time, I'm disappearing on Fridays after payday and not showing back up until maybe Sunday night. Maybe I'm just going straight to work on Monday morning. It was dark, right? I did that one too many times. I came home on a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday evening. I don't remember. I'm a blackout drinker. By this time, I'm drinking on a daily basis, hiding it well, but not hiding it very good, you know? And came home on that Sunday afternoon, and the house was completely empty, right? And no kids, no wife, no furniture, no dog. All of those things that I thought were made a family were gone. Right, completely gone. Only thing left in that house were my clothes and my closet. One would think, well, where's my wife? Where's my kids? Where's my stuff? Where's my dog? Where's my... And I didn't think that at all. So I thought, now I can drink like I need to drink. On that Sunday afternoon, I went around the corner to my watering hole, got a handle of vodka, So I'm a classy drinker, right? I drink that good vodka, that Popoff and the Kamchatka and that bottom shelf stuff that the, you know, the guy has to dust off when he grabs it off the bottom shelf, and the charcoal filtered vodka, that was my stuff. And I sat there for, I don't know, probably 2 days. I was nursing that handle, and it was just about empty, and I was in my sorrows and woes, and I did what every big bad lineman does. I picked up the phone and I called mommy. And 1988, my dad passed. I'll get back to that in a minute. But in 1988, my dad passed, and this is in somewhere in about 92, early 92. And she did exactly what she was supposed to do, right? She comforted me, and she told me, "Don't worry, son. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. You just come on home. Your bedroom's still there. You can come stay here, and we'll figure it out, right? We'll figure it all out." There's only one problem with that, is she had no idea the monster she was letting in her door, right? By this time, I'm ripping through people's lives like nobody's business. And by the way, thank you for your 10-minute talk. There was a lot of similarities in there. So I did that. I went home. Now I got a place to stay. I'm good. I've got a roof over my head. She's feeding me. I'm going to work every morning, going out drinking at night. But didn't take long for her she came home when I came home from work one day, and she said, "Hey, I ran into this woman that we knew in the town, and which was a mom of a gal that I dated in high school." And she got ran into Janice Foster. You know, she says, "Hey, Claudia's a single mom, and she gave me your phone number. You should call her." And I thought, wow, I'm single, and it's been 2 weeks. I'm lonely. And she lived down in Laguna Niguel, which was like 35 miles away. And I call her up, "Claudia, this is Steve." And we dated twice in high school or something like that. And I call her up, "Hey, Claudia, this is Steve. And hey, you know, I got your number from my mom. And your mom gave it to my mom and said that we should get together. And yeah, come on down and we'll go have a couple drinks." And oh, perfect, right? Because she drinks. And so I went down there that night, spent the night, and proceeded to spend the next 6 months worth of nights down there, because see, I just move in, right? And I was kind of going back and forth, and by this time my drinking has really progressed, right? And my coworkers don't want to work with me. I'm calling in sick a lot. I got a lot of stuff coming down on me, right? And one day I got home down to Claudia's house, and she says, "You know, Steve," I go, "Here it comes. I know that look." She goes, "You know, it's not normal for somebody to go to bed with a pint of vodka on the nightstand and a bottle of beer and have to wake up 3 times in the middle of the night to go back to sleep, taking pulls off of those bottles. I have a friend at work who her husband hasn't had a drink in 13 years, and he goes to these meetings. I think you should go to these meetings." And I'm a smart guy, right? I know that there it comes, the heat's coming. So, okay, I'll do that. So she introduces me to this gentleman named Pat, and Patrick was a good, still is, I still stay in touch with him, a good, upstanding member of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Every Tuesday night, he would come by and pick me up and take me to this men's meeting on Tuesday night. And him and his buddy Wes, who was always in the car with him, they were running dogs, they'd run around all together. You know, they'd have their fun with me. And so, "Steve, when's your sobriety date? Next Tuesday?" Because he knew I was drinking still. He knew it. And ha ha, funny, you know, let's go to the meeting. And I'd go to these meetings, and I'd sit there, probably like some of you are right now, just daydreaming, hoping the meeting gets over. And I'd go home, and I'd go, okay, the heat's off for another week, right? But what I didn't know is he was planting a little bit of a seed, right? And I kept drinking, kept doing my thing. He did that for probably 4 months, until I got home one day, and she said, "Look, you know, I know you're still drinking, and I can't do this. I can't predict whether you're going to number, because I'm doing the same thing I did to her as I did to my ex-wife, right? I'm not showing up on Friday night when I'm supposed to, all weekend, just like I did with the ex-wife. And she goes, look, I don't even, and if I did show up, I'm drunk. And see, because I'm never really, when the end there, I was never mildly intoxicated like our big book talks about, right? I was insanely drunk. And so she goes, I don't think this is going to work. And I took off and, okay, now what do I do? Go back to mommy's, I guess. And then she called me up 2 days later and says, look, I miss you. And why don't you come down for a barbecue? And I'd been drinking all day and I'm on the freeway going down there and the car stops in front of me and too fast. And I smash into the back of the car in front of me and I'm arrested. And you know, like I said, I was mildly intoxicated. I blew a 3-2, you know, which was normal, right? I don't even think I was blacked out, right? I don't hit blackout until I'm about 3-6, 3-8, right? And life's crazy though. We're living in a blackout, isn't it? I mean, it's horrible having people feed back to you what happened the night before. But so I'm arrested, you know, and I can't, now she's expecting me and I call her on my one phone call, right? And I've got this female officer sitting next to me and we're in the Orange County Central Jail booking area there. And I'm trying to tell her, oh, you know, I got in this accident and I'm a little bit drunk, but I'm going to be okay. They arrested me. I don't believe how drunk he is. She's chirping off in the background, right? I got this. You don't understand. But I had a boss that this is back in 1992, right? Thank God the drunk driving laws weren't as bad back then as they were now, right? I mean, back then, if you got a drunk driving, they slap you on the wrist and fine you $700 and make you go to 6 AA meetings, right? And put you on informal probation for 6 months or a year, whatever it was. So they gave me these AA cards and I had to go to, and I had to tell my boss because they're going to restrict my license, and I have a commercial driver's license because I'm a lineman, and we had to have a commercial license for the trucks we drove. And so he covered for me. Everything was good. And but I kept drinking, and he kept covering for me. The crews were getting more and more scared, so we're not working with him. You know, the guy's drunk all day long, right? Because I was bringing alcohol into work. See, I was smart. I'm one of them smart alcoholics. I'd get me two Snapple bottles, right? A pink lemonade. I'd pour half out of each one. I'd get a pint of vodka, pour half the pint, and then put it in my lunch pail. And it's like I'm drinking pink lemonade, right? All day long. And I thought it worked. It didn't. Because here's what happens to me. I just wanted to drink until I'm there, right? Just there. Yeah, I hear that all the time. I just want to drink until I'm there. And somewhere between here and there, there's there, right? And there happened a lot. So I'd be passed out in the cab of the truck, passed out behind underneath the tree in someone's backyard, you know, and they'd kick me. God, Steve, get out of here. We got to go, man. People are looking out the window. Huh? Oh, okay. And they were covering for me. Anyway, it got to the point where I'm a smart guy, and I thought, okay, I need help, right? And I went to I went through three treatment centers in 9 months, right? My first one was an outpatient treatment program, a place called New Beginnings in the city of Lakewood. And I'm not that bad where I got to go inpatient, right? I can do the 3 nights a week with a couple day follow-up, and I'm good, right? I drank through that whole thing. But anyway, there was one family night. This is a quick story. One family night, I conned mom into, because by this time she's pushing me out. I conned mom into coming to that family night. And I had a counselor named Rowdy. And Rowdy and her over in the corner talking, right? And I know they're talking about me. I know they're talking about me. Because everybody's talking. See, because that's the way I always thought. Everybody's talking about me. And that's my selfish and self-centeredness to the core. So they're talking, and you know, and I don't even know, I didn't know what they talked about, but I went on my merry way. I graduated out of that program, and then within a few months, I was back in an inpatient detox, in a medical detox, and then I'm good. I got to go. It's 7 days. I got my Librium, my Valium, all that good, all those little cocktails that they gave you. I'm good to go. I'm not shaking anymore. I go, and I'm drunk within 48 hours. Right? Did that two other times, and it's getting really dark. By this time, Mom says, you can't live here anymore. I can't. Nobody wants me around. And I came to that jumping off place, right? Our big book talks about. And I thought, you know, I've ruined that relationship with the ex-wife, and she won't let me see the kids because she doesn't know what kind of condition I'm going to be in. And the divorce is final by this point, but she won't let me see him on my custody times because my drinking. And I thought, you know what? I'm a loser. I'm a drunk. It's time for me to just check out, right? But I'm a coward, right? I can't run my car into a bridge abutment. I can't put a bullet in my head. I can't jump off a bridge or building. So I thought, I want to drink and I want to die. Uncle Dwayne, right? He drank himself to death. That's what I'll do. I'll drink myself to death. So I was leaving Las Vegas, the movie Leaving Las Vegas, before Leaving Las Vegas movie came out, right? I checked myself into a Super 8 motel in the City of Commerce, right next to the Downey border, with enough booze what I thought was going to kill myself. I love that movie, by the way. It just brings back all kinds of memories, right? And if you haven't seen it, you have to watch it. It's a good testament to true alcoholism, right? And I'm drinking, and all I remember about that, I think I was there for 5 days or so. I'd paid for 2 weeks, thinking that would be enough time to kill myself. And I had all these half gallons lined up in the room. And I remember, all I can remember about that room was that there was a bed, a dresser, and a big mirror on that dresser. And I remember sitting on the edge of that bed after I came to, and I look in that mirror, and you hear a member share sometimes, they say, you know what, I looked in the mirror and I saw this shell of a person, right? That wasn't my experience at all. I looked in that mirror and I saw exactly what I was, right? I saw this low down, dirty drunk, this loser of a father, loser of an employee, loser as a son, loser of the brother, the whole nine, right? All the way across the board. And I drank enough and I'd pass back out. Right? And I'd come to and I'd look in that mirror and I'd do the same thing again, right? Well, I'd knock on the door one day and one afternoon, and I'm thinking, man, who's it? I get the do not disturb sign out. I don't need towels because I'm not showering. Better not be housekeeping. Swing that door open, you know, a little angry, and who's standing there but Mom? She had hunted me down, and she says, come on, we're going to go to that place. And I didn't know what that place was. If there's anybody here that's familiar with an area around Downey and Norwalk, Norwalk is right next to Downey, and Norwalk is famous for one thing, and that is Metropolitan State Hospital, the Norwalk Nut House, right? And we used to, in high school, we used to drive around that property and looking at all the crazy people doing the Thorazine shuffle, and ooh, look at them. And she made that turn into that grounds there, and I thought, oh my God, she's going to commit me. I'm going to be one of those people walking around doing the Thorazine shuffle. She made a turn, made another turn, slowed down to about a mile an hour, opened up the door, kicked me out, and I rolled out. And she said, don't call me, I'm going to call you. And I went, oh boy, she means it this time. And I look up, and there was this building there, and it said on the big old sign above the door, it says Cider House Detox. Right? So, I honestly believe that the day that she walked into that hotel room, at that moment, I was instantly sober, right? Just sober long enough to let willingness and desperation collide, right? And let God's grace step in and say, okay. When I got into that detox, I said, I need help. And they said, good, you're in the right place. And I said, but you know what? It's been an hour since I had my last drink, and I'm telling you, Skippy, that this is going to get ugly in about another hour because I'm going to start shaking. I'm probably going to have a seizure. So I need to see a doctor. I need to be liberal. I need, I was, I tell them exactly what scripts to write in. I need this many milligrams of Librium. I need this much Valium. And he says, no. That's not what kind of detox this is. This is what we call a social model detox. We have this glass of honey water. If you sip on that, it'll take the edge off. I said, no way. Skipper, it's not going to work, right? So they said, well, here's your room. They put me in what they called the wet dorm. 3 beds. It was an old 10 by 10 padded cell is what it was, right? They leased this building from the state. It used to be a Looney Tune bin. And you know, the 10 by 10 cell, they had 3 single mattresses, mattress laying on the floor. Later, I found out they put the mattress on the floor in case you had a seizure. If you rolled out, you wouldn't hurt yourself too bad, right? Well, I'm here to say that the next 7 days was interesting. I saw stuff that I never thought I'd see. I saw lightning storms in my head. I saw lights flashing. I saw a lot, right? Bugs crawling on the wall. And pretty soon, they spoon-fed me my dinner. They held my cup with a straw in it, so I was shaking so bad. And they said, don't worry, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. And it did. I was fortunate enough to go upstairs after those. I was in detox for 11 days. I went upstairs. They had a primary program, 60-day program, all men, so I had no distractions because I had a little distractions in the other ones. And that was where my journey began in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, it was an AA-based program, right? They had H&I come in. We had meetings every night. We had they'd take us over on the other side of the grounds to the sober living building. They called it support. You go over to the sober living. They had an outside meeting over there. It was a great meeting. Chuck Averill, ended up being secretary of that meeting later on. But I mean, it was, and those were real strong members of Alcoholics Anonymous as they went to that meeting. And you know, I always like to share that I wish I had a little bit of what this one gentleman did. I remember walking across the grounds to go to that meeting the first time. I went to that Thursday night meeting. There was a big burly gentleman standing there, older gentleman, and I walked up and he reached out his hand. And he says, my name is Bud McDonald and I'm an alcoholic, and I've never seen you here before. Can I show you where the coffee is? Do you know where the bathroom is? Do you have a seat? And I wish I had a little bit of that in me because I fall short on that all the time, you know, all the time. Later, I found out at that time when that man reached out his hand, he had 42 years of sobriety. He died with 63 years of sobriety. I later found out that this gentleman was original R Gang. He was Buddy in R Gang on the old R Gang films back in the 30s and 40s or whatever, whenever they were out. And he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got out of that primary program with 72 days sober, 71 days sober, and I was on fire, man. I moved over to that support, and I had a car, and we were running buddies, and we're out there hitting meetings all over town, and things were great, you know. And then there was the chip girl, you know, that was at that meeting, and she was an older woman, and she had a house. And I needed a house. So I moved in with her, which was okay, until one day I came home and she says, I found Jesus. And I says, I didn't know he was lost. Forgive me. And then she says, I've been born again. And I says, I didn't know you died. And she didn't like that any better. So I was out. And actually, I stayed there until I met my, back up a little bit. I go to a meeting back over there at New Beginnings and I saw this woman walk in April of 94. And she was in her little hospital gown and bloated little mess. And I told the guys, I said, sorry guys, she's taken. And I ended up waiting a year before I asked her out. And we're married today, but that's a whole nother story. But she's a lot better talk speaker than I am. You probably had her up here. Some of you probably have heard her talk, but she goes all over her talks. But we move in together and you know, I'm on fire, and we move from Norwalk down to South County and I'm working in Whittier and things are going good. And then I get promoted, right? See, I was on the verge of getting promoted before things got dark. And they, old Steve's back, let's promote him. I got promoted, now the job is more important. See? There's something about my sobriety that happens, right? My alcoholism is going to get treated one way or another. It's either going to get treated with the steps, loving God, all of that stuff, or it's going to get treated with a plethora of other things, right? And so I'm treating my alcoholism. I'm trying to outrun my alcoholism and acting out, and I finally connect back up. I had a sponsor. I'm doing the steps. You know, he convinced me. I look at, you know, it was very clear, step one, look at where you're. Look at what your address was. Metropolitan State Hospital, right? That's, your life's pretty unmanageable. And you're obviously powerless over alcohol, right? But then, you know, we came to believe, right? It's kind of weird being in a Lutheran church. I was raised, baptized, confirmed Lutheran. We didn't go to church a whole lot, but like when I came up here, I didn't know I was going to give a sermon or give an AA talk, but So I knew there was a God, but I wasn't worthy of his grace, right? The things that I had done, and if there was a God, why would he have taken my dad in 1988? He was my best friend. I looked up to him. He was my hero. My brother, he's not alcoholic. He's still married to the same woman that he dated in high school. And I'm burning through relationships. He's doing great at work. How could there be a God? Look at what he's done to my life, right? Trouble with my marriages, trouble with my kids. I wouldn't even be able to see my kids. There's no God, right? And then they told me just get a conception, right? And I love what you said, your homie, And I've developed that kind of relationship with my God. I don't call him homie, but he's God, right? Say God, we talk all the time. I've never been a big guy to go drop to my knees every day, and I do talk to him. I say a prayer every day, but typically it's not on my knees, right? But that's a whole nother story. But I did my fourth step. I did the best inventory that I could. I've done several since, but I did the best inventory I could. He was very, very blatant to point out my character defects, so that was easy to do. When I did my fifth step, he said, these are your character defects, go home, sit for an hour, blah, 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 blah. It's right out of the book, right? Do six and seven, and then we're going to build this list, right? So I start building this list, and see, I'm only hitting the highlights of my drinking. I had a lot on my tip when I got here, right? I had a lot on my plate. I had hurt and harmed a lot of people, and I had a lot of amends to make. That little sister of mine that I love so dearly and picked her up at the hospital, she wouldn't talk to me. She tried to take my bottle away when I was living at mom's house, and she was still living at home, and I tried to take that bottle away from her. She tried to take the bottle away from me, and I picked her up and threw her through a plate glass window and almost cut her foot off, and she wanted nothing to do with me. And I don't blame her. Mom, God bless her. She was, done all those things, and I did all those things to her. My brother and I had some horrific physical fights because she'd call my brother up every time I was drunk, and we'd get into fisticuffs, and it was bad. Grandmother, I had a whole list, right? Coworkers, I asked my sponsor, how do I make amends to these coworkers, right? They carried me for how long? He said, well, we'll figure out how long that you were bad drunk, right? And what do you think the percentage of a worker you were? I said, I'm probably 25% best, right? He said, good, then you're gonna give them 75% more than what you would normally give them, so you're gonna do 175% of the work until you think that you're even, right? And I did that, right? And I showed up every day, and I did, I was first to climb the poles. I was first to do the hard work. I volunteered for all the crap work, and eventually those guys came back around, right? And they trusted that I'm not just some drunk saying that I'm sober and I'm going to stay sober because I proved that I was going to stay sober. And the steps went along, and it was uh, I like to say that you know, I've been this great AA member my whole 32 years of sobriety, but like I said, what happens to me is that I get comfortable. And it's what I do is I start stepping away from Alcoholics Anonymous very, very subtly. And it's so subtle that I don't even realize it's happening. Right? I got that promotion, like I said, I'm backing away from Alcoholics Anonymous, my life starts getting miserable. And I jump back in. 2005, they said, you know what? I got approached by one of the big wigs for the California company, and they said, look, we want you to start this new department. We're going to promote you again. I said, awesome, right? And so I start this new department, and it was only in Texas and back east, and I started our own branch out here in California. And one more time, I start stepping away. And by 2007, I'm doing more spiritual damage to the people I love than I ever did when I was drinking. Right? And I'm sober. I'm stone cold sober. And I'd like to say that happened one time. It's happened three times since I got sober, right? And thank God. See, I explained my drinking was progressive by nature, right? But there's another part of my illness that's progressive by nature also, and that's my behavior. And if I continue to go with untreated alcoholism, my behavior continues to progress, right? I'm not drinking, but my behavior continues to progress as if. So I'm womanizing. I'm spending money I don't have. I'm trying to just fill this giant-sized hole in my gut just to feel a little bit better because I know I can't drink. The problem with that is at the end of that road, I know that the only thing that really worked every single time was the drink, right? And thank God I never hit that spot. But I got close. And I thank God that people stood by me and I had good sponsorship. In 2007 is when I met my sponsor. Same sponsors Lee has, that Lee's my sobriety brother. I want to thank him for having me come out. I met Lee back then also. In 2007, I ended up in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Men's International Convention. And the first speaker was Bob D on Friday night, and it was like he was talking right at me, right? Telling me exactly what I suffered from, right? Next speaker the next morning was a good friend of mine today also, Ralph W. And, you know, and it was like he was talking right at me. And after that, I ran up to Bob and I said, Bob, I go, I'm dying in Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't know what's going on, man, but I'm miserable. And I said, I need help. And thank God he took on my case, and he's been my sponsor ever since. And you know, and things were good, right? I'll speed this up real quick. You know, just because we get sober and things are grand, you know, and we're working this amazing program, life still gets lifey. You know, you hear that around here a lot, right? And in 2010, my boss showed up at my office one day and said, there's two of you that do your job in California. There's only going to be one of you, and you're not it. You can find another job, or you can sign this retirement package, right? So I signed the retirement package. I left that job after 32 and a half years, almost 32 and a half years, and my world was turned upside down. 13 days later, my wife was terminated in sobriety. She'll tell you that story. That's all another story. And we were in total fear, right, of what's going to happen. But one thing I've learned real quick is that every opportunity that I've gotten, see, everything that I've grown spiritually has been through subtraction and not addition, right? When something gets taken from me or something's removed from me, I grow, right? And I started a whole new life. We talked about it at dinner a little bit, you know. I mean, I got this amazing job. The United States government, the Coast Guard, trusted me to take passengers on a vessel. You know, I mean, like hundreds of passengers, not just one or two, hundreds of passengers. And an old drunk driving, blackout drunk like me. And And that's how God works, right? My life's wonderful today. I'll close with this story that I always like to close with. A couple things real quick. That mother of mine that loved Alcoholics Anonymous, she is in love with all of you, right? Because you gave her son back. She never missed one of my birthdays for 25 years, right? She was there every single, 1st of June, every time. Steve, where are you taking your cake this year? And she would be there, and she'd be sitting right in front when I took my cake. In 2019, she passed away, and before she passed away and she took her last breath, I asked her, I says, are we good? And she says, we're good. And she nodded. She didn't say, I'm good. I said, are we good? And she nodded. And she took her last breath, and I buried her with my 25-year chip. Because that's what you would have wanted. Real quick, I'll tell you about those kids real quick. I've got an amazing relationship with those children. They grew up selfless. I don't know how that happened with a selfish and self-centered dad. But my son puts on a uniform every day, serves this country in the United States Air Force in Rapid City, South Dakota. And my daughter's a nurse in the area. She works at Merriam in Santa Maria. And, you know, when she became a nurse in her early 20s, she's 35 now, her first job was a detox nurse. And I said, Ariel, why? Why are you going to go to work and help a bunch of drunks, right? There's some cool jobs as a nurse. And she says, Dad, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my dad's life. I wouldn't have the dad that I had. She grew up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have the dad that I have if you weren't sober. And if I can give back just a little bit before I move on to my rest of my career and help another drunk like they helped you, then life is good. And I didn't teach her that. You guys taught her that. I want to thank the group for having me. I ran out of time, but I just want to say thank you so much for having me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you do too. Stick around. It's the greatest show in town. Thank you.
Let's give him another round of applause.